On this 26th day of September 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are in Chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge. Text 416. Kim karma kim karmeti.
Kim karma kim karmeti.
Kavyo pyatra mohita.
Kavyo pyatra mohita.
Tatte karma pravakshyami.
Tatte karma pravakshyami.
Yajñātvā mokṣase śubhat.
Yajñātvā mokṣase śubhat.
Even the intelligent are bewildered in determining what is action and what is inaction. Now I shall explain to you what action is, knowing which you shall be liberated from all misfortune. Purport. Action in Krishna consciousness has to be executed in accord with the examples of previous bona fide devotees. This is recommended in the 15th verse. Why such action should not be independent will be explained in the text to follow. To act in Krishna consciousness, one has to follow the leadership of authorized persons who are in a line of disciplic succession as explained in the beginning of this chapter. The system of Krishna consciousness was first narrated to the sun god. The sun god explained it to his son Manu. Manu explained it to his son Ikshvaku. And the system is current on this earth from that very remote time. Therefore, one has to follow in the footsteps of previous authorities in the line of disciplic succession. Otherwise, even the most intelligent men will be bewildered regarding the standard actions of Krishna consciousness. For this reason, the Lord decided to instruct Arjuna in Krishna consciousness directly. Because of the direct instruction of the Lord to Arjuna, anyone who follows in the footsteps of Arjuna is certainly not bewildered. It is said that one cannot ascertain the ways of religion simply by imperfect experimental knowledge. Actually, the principles of religion can only be laid down by the Lord Himself, Dharmam tu Sakshad Bhagavat Pranitam, Bhagavatam 6.3.19. No one can manufacture a religious principle by imperfect speculation. One must follow the footsteps of great authorities like Brahma, Shiva, Narada, Manu, the Kumaras, Kapila, Prahlad, Bhishma, Shukadev Goswami, Yamaraj, Janaka, and Bali Maharaj. By mental speculation, one cannot ascertain what is religion or self-realization. Therefore, out of causeless mercy to his devotees, the Lord explains directly to Arjuna what action is and what inaction is. Only action performed in Krishna consciousness can deliver a person from the entanglement of material existence. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, Krishna has described in this chapter so far about his appearance and also about the appearance of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, he gave in the first couple of verses a little history, how it's very ancient, that was recounted in this purport. And he periodically comes in order to speak the Bhagavad Gita, to reiterate knowledge that has been lost due to the force of time. Time is a great destroyer. As Krishna says in the 11th chapter, Kalosmi Loka Chayakrit Pravidhavar, chapter 4, text 15, sorry. Kalosmi Loka Chayakrit Pravidho, he says in the 11th chapter. Arjuna wants to know, who are you? He's looking at the universal form with all of its thousands of mouths and bellies and shining effulgence, and everything's burning and being devoured by this form. So Arjuna's trembling, and he, who are you? And he says, I'm time, and I've come to destroy everything. And so in several places in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am time. So everything is being destroyed, even this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita in material society. The knowledge itself is not destroyed, but it's a presence in this in human society is destroyed or distorted over time. And this is why we have so many different religions in the world. Prabhupada quotes this verse, the first line, Dharmam tu Sakshat Bhagavat Pranitam. This is spoken by Yamaraj, I believe, that real Dharma can only be enunciated by God himself. So if we don't know, if we don't have an access, an accurate access to the words of God, then we're going to be bewildered about Dharma. There is a great innate desire in the soul to have some kind of religion. It's very unnatural to be completely atheistic, to have no sense of a higher power, because we intrinsically understand that we're very fragile and we're so dependent in this world, and we look to, well, where did it all come from? Where is there some shelter against this cruel world that we're in? So people look for that, but they generally don't have access to the accurate knowledge, at least not in the Kali Yuga. And so this is an age in which you have a proliferation of kudharmas and upadharmas and these are all false dharmas, or Kaitava Dharma. Kaitava Dharma means cheating religion. In the beginning of the Bhagavatam, it says, Dharma projita kaitava tra. Here in the Bhagavatam, it is declared all of these cheating dharmas are kicked out at the beginning. The only thing that's going to be spoken about here is the dharma, or the religion, that is enunciated by God himself, and that deals purely with God, his incarnations, the process of devotional service, pure bhakti, and how to attain that. That's the theme of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that requires knowledge, and the Krishna is explaining how that knowledge has come down. He's explaining how he comes down periodically when dharma is distorted. Yada yada hi dharma sa glani. A glani is a discrepancy in dharma. Now, one of the typical discrepancies of dharma is that dharma is meant for helping us to become prosperous and happy in this world. If you're a religious person, you go to church once a week, you're like that, then you'll be happy in this world, and then afterward you go to heaven to enjoy forever, right? There's not so it's basically dharma in the service of material desires. That's cheating dharma. So that has to be cleared up. So Krishna comes periodically to reinstitute real dharma. He explained that. Now, dharma involves activity. Just to live in this world, we have to act. So the question is how to act in this world in such a way that it's also dharmic, that you're not deviating from real dharma and therefore being sinful, which will result in suffering, and how you're on a path to get free of all the bonds of your previous activities, selfish activities that are now binding us. This is called the law of karma. We're entangled in this great banyan tree. That's one of the analogies Krishna gives in the 15th chapter. That's a result of all of our previous dharmic activities, selfish activities in ignorance. It all involves knowledge. The title of this chapter is Transcendental Knowledge. So the question is how to act in knowledge in such a way that we're not further entangled. And so Krishna says, in the previous verse, all the liberated souls acted with this understanding of my transcendental nature. So Krishna is giving an example. He speaks about Varnashram here a little bit in text 13, that this is created by me. That when I act, I'm not affected. There is no work that affects me, nor do I aspire for the fruits of action. So this is our model for action. Krishna is our greatest example. We also should act in such a way that it's not affecting us one way or another, and that we don't aspire for the fruits of action. And therefore he says, this is the model. All the liberated souls acted with this understanding of my transcendental nature, and so you should also perform your activities in this way. But it's not easy to understand, because in this material world, we're here because of the false ego, which is based on this misconception that I want to enjoy, I'm the proprietor, and actually anything I do is on that basis. How can I make more money? How can I find pleasure here? How can I avoid pain over there? This is all fruitive, called fruitive activity. But we have to act in such a way. So the key is, we read text 16, what is action and what is inaction? And we'll learn that action doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing anything with your senses. As Krishna said in the third chapter, you can just be sitting there, but your mind is doing so many things. you know, making so many plans, you're meditating on this and avoiding that, and you're active. The mind can also act. That's another sense. And yet a devotee can be very active doing so many things, but he's not doing anything. It's called naishkarmya. Not doing anything in a sense. There's nothing fruitive. He's not incurring any further karma because he's not doing it for his own purpose. He's doing it for Krishna's purpose. So Krishna will give this kind of cryptic explanation. Is it here? The one who sees action and inaction and inaction and action. You know? So you see action in inaction, meaning that you're sitting there, but you're far from being inactive because your mind is planning out so many things. You know, but a devotee is very active, but you see that there's really no action there in the sense there's no fruit of action. And so he's at peace, you see? So this is what Krishna will explain. He says it's not easy to understand this. That's the next verse. So now let's go through this purport. So it's very tricky how to act in this world. You can't figure it out on your own. You know, as soon as we begin to do something, the default is I'm doing it for some material purpose. Get up, go to work. I'm driving the car so I can get to work, so I can make some money, so I can pay my bills, so I can enjoy. You know, the whole thing is in the field of action, of fruitive action. And then in the weekend, okay, now I'm getting dressed up and going to the party, doing it's all fruitive. You know, so that's kind of our default. So if you try to figure out some kind of a spiritual system, but you don't have a higher guidance, you don't have a higher example, then it's all going to be infused with that selfish activity. Okay, let me do yoga, let me do this, so I can become peaceful, I can be healthy, so I can enjoy. It's still fruitive. There's nothing spiritual about it. Even these yogis that are spoken of in the Puranas and the Vedas, who are practicing these severe austerities, a whole inner science, you know, there's a science to it. For siddhis, for powers, for traveling, for living for millions of years, for going to this loka, that loka, still fruitive. It's nothing spiritual about it. It may be a more subtle kind of material energy, but spirit only comes into the play, into consideration, really spiritual activity, when it's for the purpose of the Supreme Spirit. The individual spirit is acting in the natural relationship of service and love. All of this other stuff, whether it's just ordinary material activity or subtle material activity that the yogis perform, don't be confused about it. So that's why Krishna says it's hard to understand. Even the intelligent find it hard to understand. So therefore we need a guide. And this is explained here. Here's so many, you cannot manufacture it. One must follow the footsteps of, and there's a list here, these are all we call Mahajans. See, that's the next verse. The Bhagavad 6.3.19 is, Dharma is enunciated by Krishna. Then who's the repository of Dharma now? Because Krishna's not here on the planet. Okay, then there's these great authorities. Now, they're also from, you know, days of yore. But the followers of these great souls, who take the knowledge, who live by it, and who teach it, these are called acharyas, that's the line. Again, we come to the disciplic line. They can also teach us how to act in this world so that we're not really acting. This is called naishkarmya, the state of naishkarmya. You're doing so many things, but you're not incurring any new karma and you're getting rid of your old karma. And if you actually act in that way all the time, then you'll be free. You'll be liberated even in this world. And when we leave this body, you're back to Godhead. That's the whole idea. And all that we do is kind of training to act in that way all the time. It's a state of consciousness. It has to be done mindfully. This kind of mindfulness, you know, is that how am I acting now? Is this really for Krishna? Am I doing my duty for Krishna? Am I remembering Krishna as I do it? It's tricky because the mind is very restless, you know. But if we train like that, if we're doing things for Krishna, then the mind will eventually come along and say, oh, this is for Krishna. It's not for me, you know. And by chanting and hearing and following this discipline, one can be trained up nicely. So any questions on this? Verse. What is karma? What is akarma? Yeah.
So since you're saying that things that one does for oneself can't really be said to be spiritual activities, then in the strict sense, then can you say that only Krishna consciousness is really the only religion? It's only the real spiritual practice because all the others are
Yes, you can, but we don't say that publicly so much because we get in trouble. But the thing is, it's not so cut and dry because there are elements. You know, just like you can have within Krishna consciousness, you know, if you're karma mishra bhakti, jnana mishra bhakti. Mishra means just like in English, mixed up. You can mix in karma or fruit of desire into Krishna consciousness. It happens all the time. In fact, that's said to be the lowest level of a devotee. It says, archayam eva hadaye puja mikshadaye hite tachad chanyeshu bhakteshu sabhakta prakrita smita. A materialistic devotee, prakrita bhakta means one who's a materialistic devotee. But still, you know, he comes to the temple or any temple and prays to Krishna, has regard for the deity. But what's the prayer? What's the motivation? The intention is that, oh, please make me prosperous and healthy, you know, this and that. Let me, you know, so that there's the motivation is not pure, and therefore, even within Krishna consciousness, there can be that material motive. Krishna says right in this chapter. No, I'm sorry, seventh chapter. Chatur vidha bhajante mam jana sukrita nojana arto jigyasa artati jnani cha bhadatarshama. There's four kinds of people who come to me. He says they're all udara, great souls. Those out of suffering, out of trouble, they come to Krishna for relief, or they come for some money, or out of curiosity, you know, or out of knowledge. He says of all four, those who come in knowledge of who I am and they want to progress in devotion, those are the best. But it doesn't mean you're static. We have to always remember that, you know, Krishna consciousness is a process of transformation. We're going to be transformed anyway. I'm just living in the world, you're transformed. But Krishna consciousness means that it's an intentional transformation of the self. And so everything is in flux. You come for one motive, and that can be purified, even very quickly. As soon as you start chanting Hare Krishna and seeing who Krishna is, then your troubles, you know, fade away. You become more peaceful and happy and confident. Just living Krishna. And then you begin to learn what the real motive should be. So, but these other religions, generally speaking, there's very little real bhakti in there. You know, we look at the Bible, and I don't know much about the Bible. I never read it through. But I do know that in the Gospels, you know, Jesus Christ is saying, love thy God with all thy heart and all thy mind. And that's bhakti, you know. There are many other principles. The austerity shown, you know, by St. Francis and some of the others. This is all, you know, good. But the masses, the philosophy, this the whole very consistent and logical and effective method that's there in our literature is not there, you know, in the others. It's a little haphazard here and there. So you find that wholesale, people become misled. The main thing is you know, here he's talking about the Mahajans, the authenticity of the disciplic succession. You know, if we had a real disciplic succession of great saints like Jesus Christ, then Christianity, we'd really have something. But what happened over the years, you know, and you get the Crusades, you get the Inquisition, you get all kinds of corruption of the actual teachings. So if you don't have a Shastra, the scripture, that's unadulterated, and you don't have the unadulterated disciplic succession, then you're in trouble. You know, even though you may have some genuine religious people in the background. So this is why we stick with this. We know, you know, we have faith. This is what real faith means. Faith in the disciplic succession, the acharyas, Srila Prabhupada, he's in the line coming down from all of these great Mahajans, and the books and the knowledge, which is as it is. You know, there's no cheating here. None of this is written. None of this is written with any kind of desire to misguide or to exploit or to become famous and make money. Everyone knows that. Prabhupada wrote this all out of love and compassion and, you know, just because he wanted to give us his knowledge. That's the real key. And you find that also in every aspect of Krishna consciousness. You know, I like to listen to kirtan in the car when I'm driving, you know. Wonderful kirtan from... New Vrindavan have these 24-hour kirtans, you know. So I have one from 2009. And, you know, every single one. Now, what is it different about, you know, some station you put on, you know, rock station? Well, the whole thing comes through. They're just doing it out of love. Nobody's getting paid there. You know, there's wonderful music, wonderful kirtan. It's coming right out there. You know, and it's expert. Even if it wasn't expert, it would still be pure motive. But you can just hear that. It's a different quality. You know, and that's really the essence of, you know, what bhakti is all about. This selfless glorification of Krishna, not for anything. We went down to Ratha Yatra yesterday in Tijuana. Okay, it's not that much of an austerity. You drive down there and you're chanting and dancing, on deserted streets in Tijuana, basically. But there they were, a few people on the side. Who cares? There's Jagannath, Haribol, Jagannath, There's nothing. I can honestly say I had no idea. Okay, I'm going to do this and maybe Jagannath will bestow riches and long longevity on me. Forget it. Nobody... It's such a boon. We don't even realize it. That's not even on the horizon. It's not even. But people are going to church all the time for that. They're going to temple all the time. So that's what it's all about. It will come out here. The next few verses. Chakti Karma Pala Sangam Nitya Tipno Nadashya. This is what text 20 is, a coming attraction. Where do you find it? Karma palasam, giving up completely the fruits of your activity. It's unheard of. And always be satisfied. You can only be satisfied internally if you give up, if you have this attitude of giving up the fruits to Krishna. And nirashya, no other shelter beside Krishna. Half a verse, it's revolutionary. We take it for granted, but all of this is such revolutionary stuff. All right, where were we? Text 17. Karma no yapi bodhavyam, go ahead. Karmano yapi bodhavyam.
Karmano yapi
bodhavyam. Bodhavyam cha
vikarmanaha. Bodhavyam karmanaha.
Akarmanas cha bodhavyam.
Akarmanas cha bodhavyam.
Gahana karmano gatihi.
Gahana karmano gatihi.
The intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Therefore, one should know properly what action is, what forbidden action is, and what inaction is. So now he's introduced another term. It's not just karma, not karma, but there's also vikarma. Three things. So now listen. Purport. If one is serious about liberation from material bondage, one has to understand the distinctions between action, inaction, and unauthorized action. One has to apply oneself to such an analysis of action, reaction, and perverted actions because it is very difficult subject matter. To understand Krishna consciousness and action according to its modes, one has to learn one's relationship with the Supreme. That is, one who has learned perfectly knows that every living entity is an eternal servitor of the Lord, and that consequently one has to act in Krishna consciousness. The entire Bhagavad Gita is directed toward this conclusion. Any other conclusions against this consciousness and its attendant actions are vikarmas, or prohibited actions. To understand all this, one has to associate with authorities in Krishna consciousness and learn the secret from them. This is as good as learning from the Lord directly. Otherwise, even the most intelligent persons will be bewildered. So now we have these three things. We have karma, akarma, and vikarma. So in this context, the word karma means fruit of activity according to the rules of the Vedas. Just like Krishna introduced this concept of chaturvarnyam, and the four varnas in text 13. So this is the varna ashram dharma. Now, varnas simply mean a way of dividing society according to psychophysical nature. Some people are intelligent, really intelligent. Okay, they're the brahminical class. Then you have those who are charismatic, natural fighters and administrators, kshatriyas. You have those people who are really good at making money, or farmers and things and trade. The Vaishyas, and you have the manual laborers, the Shudras. And so that's universal. It's not like mutually exclusive. You'll find Vaishyas who are very intelligent, and you'll find Brahmins who also are good at making money. But it's a general way of organizing things. So, but Varnashram is according to rules and regulations. There are a whole series, even in the Bhagavatam we'll find, several sections describing the duties of the different Varnas and the different ashrams. And if you don't follow them, then you're outside of the varna ashram, and you're in trouble. In other words, then you're going to perform vikarma. So when you perform activities that has no relationship to the Vedas, to the genuine books of knowledge, That's called vikarma. And vikarma is very bad. It means it's you're assured of not just another birth, but a lot of suffering, you know, or even losing the human form of life, which Krishna says is the greatest a fearful danger. You know, we don't want to do that. Right? Somehow or other, it's easy. Now, one note of assurance is that even if you just do a little Krishna consciousness, you know, you're assured of a human birth. So at least we're coming back as human beings. But we want to do better than that. We want to actually go back to Godhead. So karma is activity in this context that's fruitive, but it's according to rules and regulations. Vikarma is also very fruitive without rules and regulations. And akarma is activity that is free from any reaction. That's according to the rules and regulations, the bhakti scripture, which doesn't accrue any kind of good or bad karma. That's what we want, ultimately. But it's important to know the difference. Now, vikarma is basically what's going on outside. You know, this is what, you know, it's just the way the age is. And vikarma is condemned. What comes to mind is this famous verse from Rishabhdev, Nunam pramatta kudute vikarma, yadindriya pritaya apanoti. He says those who are simply out for sense gratification, 99.9% of the people, are certainly mad, pramatta, and must perform vikarma. And his opinion, nasadu manya, he says, my opinion is it's not very good. Yata atmano yamasanna biklesha atsadeya, because by this vikarma, you're sure to get another body, which is the source of all suffering. And the chances are you'll go, you know, be great suffering, because vikarma means all kinds of sinful, horrible activities. You know, sinful activities and much worse. So we have to avoid that at all costs. And again, it comes through knowledge. What are the rules and regulations, and why should I follow them? And then you have to actually have the desire and the will to follow it. So here he's saying it's not so easy to understand. We need the guidance from above, through the Shastra and the Guru and the Acharyas. And this is the great value of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. We're going out by the millions. If people just read it and listen, they can be saved from so much suffering. Okay, so going on. So here's the action and inaction verse, text 18. Karma nikarma yak pashed. Karma nikarma yak pashed.
Karma nikarma yak pashed.
Akarma ni chakarma yaha.
Akarma ni chakarma yaha.
Sabuddhiman manusheshu.
Sabuddhiman manusheshu.
Sayukta kutsna karma krit.
Sayukta kutsna karma krit.
One who sees inaction in action, and action in inaction, is intelligent among men, and he is in the transcendental position, although engaged in all sorts of activities. Purport. A person acting in Krishna consciousness is naturally free from the bonds of karma. This is the key. His activities are all performed for Krishna. Therefore, he does not enjoy or suffer any of the effects of work. Work here being, you know, fruit of work. Consequently, he is intelligent in human society, even though he is engaged in all sorts of activities for Krishna. Akarma means without reaction to work. The impersonalist ceases fruitive activities out of fear, so that the resultant action may not be a stumbling block on the path of self-realization. But the personalist knows rightly his position as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness. Because everything is done for Krishna, he enjoys only transcendental happiness in the discharge of the service. Those who are engaged in this process are known to be without desire for personal sense gratification. The sense of eternal servitorship to Krishna makes one immune to all sorts of reactionary elements of work. So this is, the whole philosophy is right here. So the idea is this, is that we need reformation. We have to act. We're going to work somehow or other. Just to maintain the body, you have to work. Krishna says at the beginning of the previous chapter. It's not possible to stop acting. Just to eat. Just to, you know, you act. You got to act. So the question is how to act in such a way that we don't get further entangled and we gradually unentangle ourselves. So the process is, lo and behold, bhakti yoga. And it's perfectly explained here. So what we're looking for is akarma, intelligently. We're looking for that activity which is non-fruitive. So we can perform that right away. In other words, you come into the temple, sweep the floor, or, you know, take out the trash, or whatever you do, right away you're situated in akarma. Now, what's the difference between that and pure devotional service? Your consciousness. Your mind is, you know, you're coming, your mind is really, you know, not purified yet, although you're acting properly. So what you're doing is not incurring any more karma. But you can't stay on that platform because the mind is also, you know, full of all kinds of desires. So we need an activity that will also purify the heart and purify the internal body, in a sense, you know. So there's a twofold thing going on. The external body needs to work for Krishna, you know. But the internal body, the mind, the intelligence, needs to learn how to think of Krishna and how to, you know, perform that activity. And that's where, you know, we haven't said anything about bhakti yet, anything about love. And because that's ultimately, you know, the key. You can't just, you know, work on the, okay, I want to get free from my karma because I know that if I don't, then I'm going to get, you know, be reborn again and I'm going to suffer like anything. Right? Okay, that makes sense. But that's not enough of a motivation. That's the motivation of fear. You know, I'm afraid of another birth. I don't want to take birth again. So let me do something that, you know, will free me from that. But fear is not a healthy situation for the soul. You know, you don't want to just be acting on fear all the time. This is the Mayavadis. They're so afraid of any kind of body, any kind of emotion, any kind of variety, that they suppress the senses and suppress the natural function of the mind and the emotions. You know, it's very unhealthy. And that's why the Mayavadis, they're never blissful. You know, they're always disappointed and angry. You know, I mean, I've seen them. You can immediately tell this is not a devotee. They may be austere and have some kind of tejas and power from that, because you can get that. Maybe. They may be. Not necessarily. But mostly it's just a very difficult and impossible discipline. So the devotees of Krishna have a great advantage. And the advantage is Krishna, is himself. Is that if you simply think of Krishna, you know, and the easy way is just chanting his name and, you know, like the way we do, and seeing the deity, it's almost like, you know, from day one. I mean, if you walk in and you're a little bit pious, you want to do a little service because you like Krishna. You know, he's such a wonderful person. You're not a pure devotee or anything, but Krishna's attractive. His holy name is attractive. So if the mind, even a little bit, thinks of Krishna as he is, the all-attractive personality of Godhead, then there's at least a little spontaneous spark of desire to serve him or glorify him or connect with him or stay with the devotees or something. There's something attractive there, you know? And that's the first hint or the inkling of the spontaneous platform when all of this really kind of is behind you. It's not a question of, oh, I got to act akarmically, you know, so that I won't be entangled. No, you naturally just want to, you know, serve out the Sunday feast, chant your round, glorify, go and preach about Krishna. It's all bliss. You know, let's go to the festival. Why not? Yeah, Jagannath will be there. You know, we take it for granted. I mean, Prabhupada would work like anything to make this available to us. But that includes all of this stuff. Dancing and chanting is like so far beyond, you know, it's a karmic, you know. Of course, there's no karma there. But you're not thinking about that. But it's important to understand the philosophy here, because we tend to lapse back into, you know, a fruit of activity. We tend to lapse back into the modes of nature. We're coming across a really illuminating chapter in the Bhagavatam as we move through the 11th canto. We're almost at the end of the Uddhava Gita now. And the next chapter, I looked ahead a little bit, is the modes of nature. Now, we have that chapter in chapter 14 here, but this is an expansion of the modes of nature, you know, explanation. And he gives a whole list, much more extensive than here, of what the symptoms are of the modes of nature, you know. One of the ones that struck me is how depression, you know, and anger, he mentions anger several times, is a symptom of the mode of ignorance. You know, the sense of depression and defeat and laziness and madness, this is all the mode of ignorance. It's all around us. You know, people are depressed. Tijuana, I was looking at the people's faces, you know, and you could see behind their eyes is fear. You know, I don't know if, it seems to be more so because of all the stuff going on in Mexico. You know, any time you could be in the middle of a big firefight and you got these gangs everywhere, you know, just to live in that environment. You know, people are or scared. Constant fear like that, that's mode of ignorance. The symptom of a devotee who's fully, you know, Krishna conscious is fearlessness. Imagine, to be fearless in this world when there's danger at every step, it means that you're transcendental to the body. It means that you're not identifying with the body and all of its little aches and pains and dangers and all these different things. You know, that's a high platform. But the devotee, by coming in contact with Krishna and Krishna's the whole environment of bhakti yoga, automatically begins to act karmically. You know, automatically begins to act selflessly. But still, we want to know this philosophy so we don't fall back into food of activity. So this is very important. Naturally free from the bonds of karma. Naturally free. You know. A person acting in Krishna consciousness. Any questions on these points? Such a wonderful philosophy. Now he starts giving a description. Yes, Matt, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, just clarification. So if one is performing bhakti yoga, but if they have a fruitive mentality, they don't accrue any karmic reaction, still have karma?
Basically, yes. It depends on... whether you're on the path of getting rid of that fruitive mentality. Because we're all more or less fruitive, you know, in some ways. But if the intensity of your devotion is not much. Generally what happens is, you know, you cannot be in an environment like this and maintain a fruitive mentality for long, you know, because it's too uncomfortable. You're constantly hearing about, you know, how we should give it up. You know, but if you're just once a week you come to the temple, I'll give you an example. In Winnipeg, I visited a temple. It was a Hindu temple. It wasn't only a Krishna temple, and they had all the gods and goddesses. They had Shiva there. They had Kali there. They had Vishnu. They had Ram. They had several others. Ganesh prominently. So, you know, this is not authorized. You know, this is kind of let's cover all our bases. You know, but people were coming very regularly. And they were seriously coming. Every week. It was once a week they had this thing. We were going and doing some kirtan. So they're going for fruitive reasons. You know. In other words, Ganesh especially, you know, he'll help your business. Lakshmi. Okay. Lakshmi. You know, help my business. I'm not sure why they pray to Radha and Krishna, what they pray for, but anyway, they have their own ideas and they have their own mantras that they're chanting, and they're all, you know, coming from the Vedas here and there. Some of the things, they don't know what they're doing. They're just there because if I don't go, well, you know, the gods won't be happy or whatever. I don't know what's going on, you know. But that, you're still going to accrue karma. You're not going anywhere. You know, you may maybe go up to the heavenly planets or maybe, you know, like this. But devotees who are within the environment of pure devotion, they may still have some fruit of desire, but their activity is such that if you sweep this floor, well, there's really nothing that you can aspire to, you know, except doing the floor nicely, you know. But you're not a pure devotee yet, you know. But still, you're not going to accrue any karma from that. You see the difference. So generally, it's people who don't understand. Again, you come back to knowledge. What you do with understanding, this comes up in the Gita. You know, activity, jagya, in knowledge is so much more effective. Whereas some activity that you just perform because it's a thing to do, you know, because my family wants me to go, okay, when do we leave, when's the food coming out, you know. That's, you're not going to get much benefit from that. That's real fruit of activity, you know. That's the difference. Okay, so now we'll embark here. There's four or five verses describing what he means by a karmic activity. Yasya sarve samarambha kama sankalpa varjita jnanagni dagda karmanam tamahu panditam buddha. One is understood to be in full knowledge whose every endeavor is devoid of desire for sense gratification. He is said by sages to be a worker for whom the reactions of work have been burned up by the fire of perfect knowledge. Purport. Only a person in full knowledge can understand the activities of a person in Krishna consciousness. Because the person in Krishna consciousness is devoid of all kinds of sense gratificatory propensities, it is to be understood that he has burned up the reactions of his work by perfect knowledge of his constitutional position as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is actually learned who has attained to such perfection of knowledge. Development of this knowledge of eternal servitorship to the Lord is compared to fire. Such a fire, once kindled, can burn up all kinds of reactions to work. So this is, you know, every morning we sing, right? Yani kani ta papani brahma hatari kani cha, right? So that's pretty amazing when you think about it. If you murder someone, that's bad. You know, that's you're going to suffer for that. But it depends also on who you murder. If you kill a Brahmin, that's really bad. You know, who knows how many millions of births, you know, you do to get suffering. Not good. But here it says, even if you kill a Brahmin, that's what Brahmahatti, you know, Brahmahatti kind. If you just circumambulate Tulsi, yeah, you get free from that. What, you know, and the implication is, what to speak of lesser sins? In other words, what an opportunity, you know, just walking around. So, But the thing is, it's even more effective if you know. This is why I'm always encouraging devotees, learn the meaning of the songs. You know, the thing, if your mind is completely absorbed in it, you get more benefit. And you're more enthusiastic to perform the activity. Just to know the meaning of that song, you know, that Tulsi song, it's like ecstatic. You know, you're praying for a very high level of devotion. We went over this in my place. We have a little review thing. So, one is in full knowledge, if every endeavor, now just see what that means, every endeavor, it means you're brushing your teeth, you're going to take rest, you know. That's so that I can rest this body, which is a tool for Krishna, it's all bhakti, you see? Not that you're just, you know, taking rest because you're tired, but, I'm maintaining this body for Krishna's service. Just like the gopis, it's in chapter 4 of the Adi Leela, it's very illuminating. Why do they dress themselves so nicely? Now, this is a thing that ladies do, right? They put on all kinds of cosmetics, and they do this, you know. So generally, you can say, well, that's pretty much of a self-centered thing. You know, they want to attract some man, you know. But here, they're doing it just to please Krishna. That's the only reason they dress themselves, and they put on, because Krishna likes to see me beautifully, so I'll do it, you know. And the key is, they also appreciate each other, you know. In other words, they're not envious of each other. Oh, she's looking more beautiful. Maybe I'll, you know, mess up her cosmetics so that she won't attract me. No. Because it's Krishna's the center. If Krishna wants to see her beautiful and they see all of it, well, let's all do it, you know. So you see how selfless it is. And the wonderful thing is, and this is the real amazing one, Krishna's also doing the same thing. He knows that the gopis want to serve him in a certain way. And so he's completely suppressing his majesty and power, and he's just showing his sweetness, you know, all of the adolescent sweetness that attract, you know, the 14 and 15 year old gopis, you know, and so that rasa can prosper. His mother, you know, wants to have that maternal rasa with him. Okay, so I'll appear as this little baby boy, you know, and I'll be mischievous and invoke all of those things. And she'll worry that my feet will get, you know, get pricked by the stones in the forest. You know, she doesn't know that I'm, you know, controller of all the stones and everything. You know, she doesn't know that. She thinks, oh, he won't be safe. You see that? He's just doing that for her, and she's just doing that for him. And so it's completely selfless on both sides. Why is Krishna speaking this Bhagavad Gita? So he'll become famous? No, he's just doing it for us. You see, this is the currency. This is the currency. This is the wealth of the spiritual world, of the spirit, is that everything, every breath is selfless. It's done completely out of love. You try to imagine, you know, this is the land of love, of real love. Love is completely selfless. There's no concern for oneself. Oh, whatever Krishna wants. If he wants me to suffer in this world, that's okay. You know, the example, try to imagine this. You know, this is an example from history. Lord Chaitanya, what's so wonderful about his Leela, it's historic. 500 years ago, you know, that was like Columbus, you know, sailed the waves, right? So, recent history. So there's a devotee of his named Vasudev Dutt, who was so compassionate that he prayed to Lord Chaitanya personally that just you take all the sinful reactions from all the living entities, there's a lot, and just put them on my head, I'll go to hell and they'll be liberated. And he meant it. And Lord Chaitanya, he saw that, he cried. You know, that there was such a display of selfless love for everybody. And in the purport, there Prabhupada talks about how this is like Jesus Christ did, but he said this is even more than Jesus Christ did. You know, Jesus. So, you know, you try to imagine that. You know, that's what it means here. Yasya sarve samarambha kama sankalpa vardita, to become everything completely freed from even the desire for sense gratification. And this is a fire. This is, you know, in knowledge, this is a fire that burns to ashes all karma. Tamahu panditam buddha. Those who are intelligent say this is a real pandit, someone who works and is a learned person. So it's only possible, as Prabhupada says, it's possible only for one in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, fruit of activity has to seep in there. You know, it seeps in. Even among devotees, you know, they were warned, don't let the desire for fame, name and fame seep in to get back into your heart, you know, because Krishna won't want to sit there anymore, you know. It's before we hit that platform, probably because of the platform of bhava and prema, you know, you're fixed, you know. There's always the danger that these things will seep in. So we have to be vigilant. It's not easy to do it in one birth. But this is the standard. You know, where do you see this in another religion? Every single activity, sarve samarambha, every activity is devoid of the desire for sense gratification. Every endeavor is devoid of desire. Well, maybe some of them. You know, everyone give a little, you know, give tithe, give one-tenth. No, he said give 100%. Krishna says 100%. Why only one-tenth? You know, tithing, you know. That means, okay, one-tenth for God, and then that's a good investment, and then I'll, you know, get pious credits, and I'll be happy with the other 90%. That's not bhakti. All right, let's do one more. Chakva karma pala sangam nitya tripto narashrayaha karmanya vipavritopi naiva kinchit karoti saha. Abandoning all attachment to the results of his activities, ever satisfied and independent, he performs no fruit of action, although engaged in all kinds of undertakings. So this is seeing inaction in action. This freedom from the bondage of actions is possible only in Krishna consciousness when one is doing everything for Krishna. A Krishna conscious person acts out of pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he has no attraction for the results of the action. He is not even attached to his personal maintenance, for everything is left to Krishna. Nor is he anxious to secure things, nor to protect things already in his possession. He does his duty to the best of his ability and leaves everything to Krishna. Such an unattached person is always free from the resultant reactions of good and bad. It is as though he were not doing anything. See that? Inaction, in action. This is the sign of akarma, or actions without fruit of reactions. Any other action, therefore, devoid of Krishna consciousness, is binding upon the worker, and that is the real aspect of vikarma, as explained herein before. So, you know, the simple motto is, if you want 100%, you have to give 100%. You know, Krishna doesn't really look at what we give to him. He looks at what we're holding back. You know, if someone has $1 million and he gives 50,000, that's great, you know. But if someone has 50,000 and gives 50,000, Krishna really appreciates it. You see that? So we're looking for, you know, if we want the ultimate result, then we need to understand the necessity of giving more and more until we actually give everything. That's what Krishna consciousness is all about. Okay, we need to adjourn or to prepare for kirtan. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.